Farmer Friday on Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. We are live in the Morton studio today, and again, it is Farmer Friday. We'd love to hear from you. Our phone lines will be open all throughout the show. If you want to call in, 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. We're going to get to the AgPhD mailbag just about right away here in the show. Darren, you want to get some questions ready to go over there. Before we do, I guess I will just say, in the upper Midwestern United States where we farm, conditions are horrible. So we have snow that's blowing around right now. We're lucky because we don't have any accumulation. They do to the north, especially up in North Dakota. It's terrible. It's one of the worst early October blizzards that we have ever seen. It just keeps piling up this year, you know. Everything, it seems like, has been against us as farmers. But I just encourage you, if you're in one of those areas, just hang in there. Usually, we do get plenty of opportunity to get the crop out. Now, don't get me wrong, we're probably going to have to hustle. And certainly, there's going to be some mud out there. It's not going to be ideal conditions. You know, we often talk, let's say when we're in the winter and we're doing winter meetings, we talk about, yeah, let's try to reduce compaction. And everybody says, oh, that's a great idea. We'll try to stay out of the fields when they're wet. And then reality hits and you go, yeah, I got to get the crop out one way or the other. Because the other issue, like the corn that we're harvesting literally today as the snow is flying, it was planted super late. And it was a variety we would never plant this far south, very early variety. But we thought, yeah, what the heck? There's some of this left. It's an older number. Let's just do it. Well, corn's fallen on the ground, and we're harvesting at 23% moisture. So we just harvested some last week, and no corn was on the ground. So we had big winds again, and tried to get out there. Fortunately, it's only a few acres. We're only talking, I mean, it doesn't amount to anything. But the point is, pay attention to your fields. So I literally just sent a text to our guy who's operating the combine right now while we're doing the radio show saying, hey, when you get done with that field, here's the next field I want you to go to because I'm worried that corn may fall on the ground next. So let's get it done. Even though it's 25% moisture, I don't care. I just don't want to take that risk. So I just really encourage you, evaluate your hybrids, evaluate your soybean varieties, evaluate anything you've got left that is out there in the field to try to figure out, all right, what's my priority? Beyond that, I guess I would just say I'm personally trying as hard as I can to focus on next year. Since this year wasn't a whole lot of fun, I'm thinking an awful lot about, okay, what are we going to do different next year? Where else do I want to throw some more tile in? What crop specifically are we going to plant on each field? What are we going to do for fertility? And even for that matter, the grain marketing, for us, a lot of that won't occur until next year. We'll put it in the bin and then we'll market it next year. I personally think we're going to see a lot better basis levels because we didn't have a lot of crop around here. The state of South Dakota actually led the nation in percent of prevent plant acres, out of crop acres. And the reason why is because we just don't have enough tile in the ground. And then the other thing is, you know, when it comes to this whole marketing deal, I keep saying it almost every day, but I mean, the crop's not out there. The government's wrong, and I still think markets are going up. I certainly could be wrong. I doubt it, but all I know is we're going to put a lot of our grain in the bin, and we're going to let her sit there for about 6 months, and I'm certainly hoping the basis level will get better, board of trade price will get better, and we will be able to sell this short crop for at least a little bit more money, and hopefully it doesn't turn out too bad. All right, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
Love the delayed reaction. Yeah. That's awesome. Okay, I got a note from Brian in Illinois, and we've talked to Brian a number of times on the phone, and he said, just give me a heads up, this summer I had a stroke and suffer from something called aphasia, which is a speech or language impairment, with 180,000 people in the U.S. yearly getting affected by that. Wow, that's big. He said, just heads up, he's getting better. I just thought he would share that, and put the word out that that's probably why we haven't heard from him on the radio for a little bit. But Brian, our prayers are with you, and hopefully you'll be getting better real soon. Got another one here. This is from Phil. He said, "You guys always talk about oxygen in the soil. Isn't what the soil needs carbon dioxide?" You know, we're talking about what the plants need, Phil. And when we think about if we don't have oxygen around the roots, many of the microbes that are helping our plants are aerobic. So they need oxygen to do their job. And when we don't have enough oxygen around the roots, root growth also stops. Well, so we got a couple of different factors there that you'll have dead roots if you don't have oxygen. And number two, you'll have dead microbes. Neither one of them is good for your plant.
And really, what we should be saying instead of oxygen, it's air. It's whatever is in air. As you know, most of air is actually nitrogen. There's carbon dioxide. There's a lot of stuff in the air. But we need air in the soil. So, yeah, that's probably a good catch. We should probably stop just saying oxygen because that's only a small component of air, but we need lots of air in the soil. Roughly, let's put it this way, ideal soil composition is about 50% dirt, 25% water, and 25% air. Without the air in the soil, you've got not a lot of soil life that's going to live.
Nope, that could be a real challenge, no doubt about that. All right, I got a question from Tim in Ohio. He said, we were talking about GDUs, and he had asked a question several weeks back about how many GDUs you need for 99-day corn. We gave him an answer of somewhere in the neighborhood of 2,300 to 2,400. But, of course, that varies a lot seed company to seed company. He had a couple questions about our GDU calculator app. And he said, what does lost GDUs mean? That just means you got your crop in after there were already some GDUs accumulated for the growing season. And then number two, how accurate is the science behind this? Because we see different hybrids, different companies, different maturities with GDUs all over the board. Yep, it's far from an exact science. And personally, I believe sunlight has a big factor in this too, in addition to just what the air temperatures were. So you're right, going to be a lot of difference out there, but be interesting, you know, on your own farm just to keep track of GDUs year to year and see where your crop's at, what development stage happens at how many GDUs and so forth. Thanks for the feedback, Tim. We appreciate it. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Using N-Serve Nitrogen Stabilizer with fall fertilizer applications keeps nitrogen available into the spring for maximum crop growth. Field trials in Iowa show N-Serve delivered an average revenue increase of $22.96 per acre, and N-Serve is the only recognized nitrogen stabilizer product in the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy because it reduces nitrate leaching. That's max profit in an environmentally sustainable way. Calculate your field's profit potential at nitrogenmaximizers.com.
We plant corn in Iowa, spray soybeans in Illinois.
We pull calves in Kansas, farrow hogs in Minnesota.
We raise rice in Arkansas, rye in Canada, and wheat everywhere in between.
We farm millions of acres across North America
and build every piece of Case IH equipment.
Built by farmers, for farmers. Case IH. Rethink productivity.
Bean growers continue to see yield loss from white mold across the Midwest this season. To maximize next year's crop, a white mold prevention strategy that includes Contans WG soil fungicide is a must for your farming operation. Applying Contans this fall to reduce the sclerotia in the soil is the most effective way to stop white mold at its source. Start a Contans white mold control strategy this fall or pay for it later in lost yield.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Today we're just looking out the window, watching the snowflakes in the air. So far not accumulating a whole lot on the ground yet, so hopefully we can avoid that. Wonder how things are over in Illinois, though. We've got Kevin with us. He's in Western Illinois. Kevin, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Well, This time last week it was 93. Today it's 44 for the high.
Wow. Yeah, it's amazing when that front comes through like that, how it can change things in a big way. All right, how about soil conditions? Are you super wet there still? Are guys able to get out and start some harvest?
We got about in this area here locally, about a half inch of rain in the last 24 hours. It stopped things, you know, but we're not real, real wet. No, in fact, we were kind of almost the point of being dry. And as you move farther south in Illinois got drier. But no, we're just got a rain delay. If it doesn't rain more, we're out just a day or so.
Yeah, that's not so bad. We had a little bit of moisture too, and it wasn't so bad. It's keeping us out of the beans, but today we were able to dig back out in the corn. Have you gotten started out there a little bit, and what are you seeing for yields? Are you happy with things?
Well, I started in corn about 3 weeks ago. In fact, I'm done in my little operation in corn, and I'm exactly 35 bushel an acre under average for the farm that it was last year. I'm still pretty content with it because it was a tough year. Beans, I haven't started on any yet. They're not quite ready, and I'm anxious to get into them.
Yeah, we've got a few beans. We got into our beans a little bit, and then now we've been held out by rain, but some of them just weren't quite ready. Now we're freezing.
Well, we're not held out by rain. The beans just weren't fit, so that's really what we're waiting on. Yes, it's just been a real struggle this year, and to think that here it is October 11th, and we're still waiting for soybeans to get fit? I mean, we're normally done.
Yeah. Well, I think pretty much anywhere across this Midwest, we're running into the same situation. It's just it's the farther south, it's just not quite as severe as what you have been. But all in all, where I'm at, we've been pretty fortunate that it wasn't as severe as it was to the east and to the north of us. We had toughness. I mean, as I said a while back, I had all the way from 0 to 350 bushel acre down the same pass with the combine, and that's what we ran into. And but all in all, we're fortunate to have what we have. It could have been worse.
Yeah, it sure could have been. You know, there are so many disease issues and those kinds of challenges out there. Was it disease that held you back on some of that, or was it just flat out too much water?
Flat out too much water from it backing up on the ground from our drainage ditches and so forth. We're just literally ponding from backing up. You can't do anything about getting it off until those ditches go down, you know. As far as disease, well, we're in an area here where we have a lot of ground fog in the morning and so forth, and that's why I'm a true believer in fungicide on every acre, on every crop. And in some cases, I use multiple passes of it. But no, disease-wise, both corn and soybeans on me, as well as I look at the neighbors around, pretty healthy-looking stuff in this area.
Excellent. That's good. Well, at least, you know, we think about it. A lot of guys are talking about, I've got quite a weed seed bank going into next year, and also I've built up some inoculum on these diseases. Having healthy plants this year bodes well for next year's crop, no doubt about that. But talking with Kevin in Western Illinois. Kevin, stay safe here the rest of harvest, and good luck to you.
Same to you all and to everybody else out there. Have a good harvest and stay healthy.
You bet. Let's head down to Iowa. Get Brad in Central Iowa with us right now. Brad, how are you doing?
I'm fine. How about you guys?
Good. How are things going on your farm?
Well, we're kind of delayed. We got another inch of rain almost yesterday, so has slowed up things. So I've been looking at some soil test results that we pulled this fall and trying to make some decisions on what we're going to apply this fall, and thought maybe you'd call in and see if you guys could help me out a little bit.
Sure. We enjoy looking at soil tests, and that's a great rainy day job during harvest when you can't get anything else going. All right, what you got?
Yeah, so I'm planning on attending the workshop up in March, and I got some samples sent to Midwest Labs and then the Neil's lab, and he gave some recommendations. And so I've been looking around for sources of all the different products that he recommended. And I've run into a few challenges, and one of those is around gypsum.
Okay.
We don't really have a source locally for a good gypsum. I did find pelletized gypsum, But he had in the recommendation that if you are going to spread gypsum 2,000 pounds per acre, so a ton, calcium carbonate that we have used or lime in our area is pretty high in magnesium, and our soil is already high in magnesium. So I wondered what you guys thought about using some of these pelletized products. There's several of them that are locally available. And as I look at the analysis, they kind of range from, say, a 6-to-1 to 8-to-1 equivalent, they say, for calcium carbonate. But I'm not had any experience with those, so I wondered what your guys' thoughts there are or if I need to get more information.
Sure. Yeah, we've done a lot of the pelletized stuff, Brad. I will just tell you this. If it's rented ground, you want a quick change, you want not necessarily a permanent change or a big change, the pelletized things are fine. It's just if you've got to do massive amounts of stuff, then it can get kind of expensive and it's not going to maybe give you as long-term a solution. But what it really kind of comes back to is, I'll just give you an example off our farm. If I'm going to compare, we have water treatment lime available, obviously Pell lime, and there's ag lime. So I got three different lime sources, all of them calcitic lime. So that part's fine. To your point, the dolomitic lime is high in magnesium. If you're looking for calcitic lime, yeah, you got to find that. But anyway, we have all three sources available. When I test each of the sources, which is always what you want to do to find out not only what your calcium carbonate equivalent is, you know, we want to find out the fineness, but we also are interested in what other stuff comes along with it. So like the water treatment lime, for example, we get some free sulfur, we get some free micronutrients. There are other nutrients that come with it, other fertilizers. So that part can be good, it can be an advantage, and it can in effect cut your net cost for the lime. But anyway, my point is simply this. When I test it all out, our water treatment lime, we're just super lucky. It is really a fine grade and a high grade of lime. So it's by far the cheapest way for us to go. And like I say, we're just lucky. With these pelletized products, they may or may not be a better choice for you versus some of that ag lime that is available. Now, when you say, and I just saw you're from central Iowa, and I'm thinking you made the comment about you didn't have stuff that was close to you available. Iowa has almost the, I'm not going to say the most because I don't know every state in the country, but Iowa has a crazy amount of gypsum available in different areas of Iowa. And also there is a lot of lime that is calcitic lime that's available in Iowa. I know because our dad is originally from Iowa, and we work with hundreds of farmers, really good farmers from all across the state of Iowa. But anyway, I would just keep looking out there. And when you do find some of these ag lime sources, or let's say some good gypsum sources, have the stuff tested, find out what it actually is, and kind of go from there. But yeah, ultimately, you got to look at what's your cost on a per pound, a per acre basis, and hey, I've got to change my soil so much, how much is that going to cost me? How long is it going to last? Is it going to end up paying?
You know, the other thing, Brad, that some of these gypsum suppliers, I know we don't have a local source right here, but what's interesting is there's a lot of grain backhauls that come back with gypsum, and they just end up piling it back here. And when they do that, the trucking is greatly reduced. So there may be something like that, not terribly far from you, but I don't know that answer for sure. But yeah,
when I've looked and called and got the soil samples from basically there's the same company owns all the mines around here close. And when I say close, within an hour and a half.
Okay.
And so those are all pretty similar. The farthest one away actually is the most calcitic. It has only like 0.2% magnesium. So I'd like to get that, but then the trucking goes up. So
Yeah. Big trade, especially when you had to put on a ton of gypsum per acre, or you know, tons of lime, that kind of thing. It gets pretty expensive. Hey, Brad, thanks for the call. Really appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you at the workshop this winter. It's Farmer Friday on our show today. We'll be right back after this.
What if surviving a drought began with a microbe? What if instead of 10 buyers, you could access 10,000? What if you were paid for the carbon your crops pulled from the air? And what if these what-ifs weren't what-ifs at all? At Indigo, we're working with farmers to question the entire agriculture system, to reimagine everything from soil to sale. Yep, the whole lot. Visit indigoag.com/questions to find out more. Indigo, from questions we grow.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
How do you know when to run your grain bin fans? There's an app for that. With the Steps GMS app, you can manually turn your fans on and off from your smartphone. You can also configure the Steps GMS app to automatically turn fans on when the humidity or temperature is ideal to keep your grain in top quality condition. Save yourself some time and take the guesswork out of managing your stored grain with the Steps GMS app. Contact us at stepsgms.com for more information.
No one has to explain stress to a farmer. That's like explaining a missed forecast to a weatherman. Now, Mother Nature stresses soybeans the way markets, bankers, and politics can stress you. But there's a proven way to reduce stress. With Preaxor fungicide, you'll see the difference. It decreases stress from disease, drought, hail, and heat, so your beans can focus on what matters most, better yields. Talk to your local rep about Preaxor fungicide and BASF Plant Health. Always read and follow label directions.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
As your corn crop grows and the ear begins to form, potassium is at a high demand, almost as high as nitrogen. The same is true for soybeans, with similar high demands of potassium during pod fill. Don't fall behind. Ensure your crop is getting its potassium with Catalyst. Catalyst by Actagro has been shown to be the best at entering the leaf when compared to other leading potassium products. Visit k-supercharged.com for more information.
Farmer Friday on Ag PhD Radio. That means our phone lines are open throughout the show today. We'd love to hear what's happening on your farm and how harvest is going along. 844-44-AG-PHD is the number. You can also send us an email, radio at agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. Let's head out to Michigan, get Kevin on with us. Kevin, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing good. Enjoying the rain.
Did you guys need a little bit of rain up there?
No. We did not.
Well, I like sarcasm. I'm okay with that. So have you gotten a start on harvest at all?
No, not yet. Everything got in late this year, and some of the neighbors were just starting to get out, and then Mother Nature decided to pump the brakes a little bit on us.
Yep. So summarize what your crops look like. You said planting was late. Does stuff look okay?
Yeah. Well, beans look good. Corn is real variable. If you had a tile this year, you certainly paid for it. But a lot of my corn is just, you go out in one spot and, oh, this doesn't look too bad. And you go out in the next and like, oh. So we'll see what happens when we get in there. But the beans are, my beans, I planted a 2-5 the last day of June, and they are still green. So, well, how long does it take when they just start to turn before it's okay to have a frost?
Ooh, boy, quite a while. A lot of times when they start turning, we think it's going to be a month before we're harvested, but that's not how long it is before we see for frost.
Yeah, 3 weeks for soybeans. Usually they're going to be fairly safe in a week or two once they start to turn. But the whole problem is not every bean in the field turns at the same time. So you always have spots where you go, oh, that's ready. And then you go to other areas, ooh, that's not very ready at all. A lot of times it's in the low ground. So I would just say this. A lot of guys, as harvest usually gets started around here, let's call it the 1st of October, I will talk to all kinds of farmers that will say, boy, I wish we'd get a frost now and even things up. And I go, no way. You're going to lose some yield. I'd ideally like to have it after the beans start turning that we go at least 2 weeks before we get that frost. And if that's the case, then I usually feel almost 100% confident we've lost nothing. But like I say, it's the spots in the fields. And so we look at the whole average on everything, not just the best areas in the field. I want everything to actually finish, give us good yield. And so you'll see smaller beans. You'll see green beans if you get this early frost. I mean, that's the challenge. And yeah, this year, I mean, it was all across the board. So I was just talking earlier in the show, we're combining some corn today. It's 15, 20 days earlier maturing than we normally would ever plant, but we were planting the middle of June. I mean, it was just crazy, some of the stuff we had to do this year, and it was the same kind of deal on beans. Well, some guys didn't switch to earlier corn, didn't switch to earlier beans, and so now, yeah, we're really worried about frost for a lot of these people.
Well, I ordered October 25th for a frost date, so I should be fine.
Well, I ordered November 25th, and I didn't get my wish, so...
Well, Brian kind of wishes it was summer year-round. I don't mind the changing of the seasons. I just wish they would not change so suddenly here. Our last caller we were talking to said it went from 93 to 44. That's too quick for me. I'd prefer it to be a little more gradual.
Yep, this will be a year to either forget or I'll never forget.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely one that'll be talked about for a long time. Well, Kevin, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. Good luck here. Hopefully you're able to miss this frost coming up and get everything finished up just fine.
Thank you much.
You bet. Let's head out to Ohio. We got Keith with us right now. Keith, how's it going today? Yep. Are you there now, Keith? Let me see. We may have a phone connection there. Yeah, I'm not hearing anything. Maybe you can check that out, Janelle, and see what's going on. Oh, do you have a question, Brent? I didn't know if you had a mailbag question ready to go.
I can give you a mailbag question if you're ready for that.
I think sure. We lost Keith there online.
Okay, so this question comes in, let's see, Inco, wondering, how about iron sulfate as a fertilizer? Can that work if I'm short on iron?
You know, yes, we've done a little work with iron sulfate, especially at the Ag PhD Field Day site. When we're looking at, what it's going to take to get really high yields, every once in a while we're running a little short in iron, depending on where we're at. One of the things that we want to watch with iron too is your manganese levels in the soil. If we end up with more manganese than iron, we run into trouble. So you want to make sure you've got decent iron availability out there. And iron sulfate's been one way that we've done some. That's really the only place that we've done it. We're generally pretty blessed with high iron levels in our soil.
Yeah,
so
but let's
we haven't
also
been doing that on large scale.
Okay, but let's talk about for the guys that have iron deficiency chlorosis. We do not typically recommend iron sulfate there. That's where we're going to go with some type of iron chelate product. There are a lot of those out there, like a soy green or green bean, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, ortho EDDHA yes. chelate. Yep. Yeah, that's a little different. But you're right. If you just need a little iron and it's not about iron chlorosis, that would be a good way to go. All right, got Keith on with us now in Ohio. Keith, how are you doing today?
I'm just fine. How you doing?
Good. Have you guys gotten started on harvest?
Yes, we're getting along. We just finished soybeans here a little bit ago, and then it just started raining. So September, we lived in the desert over here. We had less than a 2/10 inch of rain the whole month, and we had all that 90-degree weather. So it really brought the crops on really early, and soybeans especially. They still had leaves on them, but they were testing 9 to 10%.
Oh, wow.
10%. So that's why we went ahead. We like to normally run a lot of corn before we run beans, but we went ahead and jumped on beans right away. And so we're wrapping those up and ready to start on corn now.
You know, I've talked to a number of guys in Ohio over the summer here about, well, and there's a lot of variants I know across your state, just like there is with ours, with guys that could get planted and guys that didn't get anything in, and definitely some messes out in some of those fields trying to do that. I would take a little bit of dry here just to get something done, but is that too much dry for your area, or was that kind of needed?
No, it was really kind of needed because I – you know, we were fortunate. I live in the southern part of the state, right along Interstate 70, and, you know, we got over half our crops planted there in the middle of May, but we had to finish up in June on some of it. And so we're really fortunate that the crops, we had enough moisture early, and I say the dry September really didn't hurt things that bad. If anything, it matured them, and, you know, it didn't affect our yields that bad or anything. We had a test plot with called Boots on the Ground with North Central Research, where we planted beans and then went in 3 weeks later and planted them. And the first planting we did 130,000 seeds per acre, then went back in 3 weeks later and did 160,000 seeds per acre and did full fungicides and insecticides on everything. And you know, it's amazing. We saw over a 10 bushel advantage early planted beans again. So, you know, it really pays plant early if less population, and that's what we're trying to really promote. You know, ideally, we'd like to do it last March, first April on some of the plot work. But we was geared to do that this year, but we couldn't get in. It was just too wet.
Yeah, very interesting. We've seen the same kinds of things here. Early planted beans have really paid. We've gotten a lot more yield. And we talk to growers all the time, and they're like, oh, you know, all these ideas you have about raising yield, they all cost a lot of money. No, they don't. This one is free. You just plant right. A little sooner if you can.
Well, what's really changed the whole ballgame, like I tell a lot of guys, it's really, you know, our seed treatments, and we're a real big believer in Oliva. We're seeing where we leave strips. We're seeing 6 to 10 bushel with Olivo on the crop. This seems like it gets the crop started even better than Olivo does. Then with all of our seed treatments, you know, it just really jumps. And so we've been using Olivo the last 2 years 100% on everything.
Yeah, I think that'd be a smart move for early plant to get some SDS protection. That's usually one of those diseases we see a little more of on the early plant. Yeah. Well, that's interesting, Keith.
I think we're even seeing a little bit of Phytophthora. You know, it's helping out a little bit in these wet soils and everything. So it's really interesting. Like I said, that's what we keep doing plot work on it. And it's, you know, it's showing up really big for us.
Outstanding. Well, thanks for doing that research, Keith. And thanks for sharing with us on the show today. Good luck and stay safe the rest of this harvest.
Yeah, we're anxious to get into the corn because our corn's going pretty good. I'm hearing moisture in our corn around here. We're down to like 14 to 20% on stuff.
Wow, that's a dry September for sure.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic pesticides from Atticus LLC. Atticus offers a vast portfolio of branded generic fungicides, herbicides, and insecticides for row crops. Atticus puts grassroots experience and common sense logic to work to make product selection easier and on your terms. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit atticusllc.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
If your fertilizers aren't formulated to maximize your efficiency, if you can't mix all the PK and micros your crop needs into one prescription application, if you have to add products to improve and invigorate your soil biology, then you need to expect more from your fertilizer. With AgroLiquid's advanced technology, you can expect more, a lot more. Make the most of your crop nutrition. With AgroLiquid, to find a crop nutrition expert near you, visit agroliquid.com.
If you're like most farmers, you start thinking about next year's herbicide program right now. And the first step to a clean start next spring is applying Authority MTZ-DF herbicide this fall. Nothing burns down tough winter annuals, including common chickweed, henbit, and mare's tail, like a tank mix containing Authority MTZ-DF herbicide. Talk to your FMC Star retailer about Authority MTZ-DF herbicide, or visit fmcauthority.com. Always read and follow label directions. Authority is not registered for sale or use in California.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Build with the best. When you choose Morton Buildings for your next farm storage building, you'll experience the Morton advantage at every step, starting before the walls even go up. Since the value of our buildings is in its ability to protect what you have stored inside, we ensure that every component is researched and tested to withstand the elements in all weather conditions. And we back it up with the strongest warranty in the business. Looks better, built stronger, lasts longer. Learn more at MortonBuildings.com.
Avoid the V-shaped pattern of injury caused by chemical buildup in your booms. The Express End Cap from Hypro eliminates the dead ends that lead to herbicide buildup and provides easy access to your booms, giving a complete flush between applications. Hypro, helping you spray better.
The last thing you want after harvesting your grain is to spoil it before it goes to market. The Grain Temp Guard from Farm Shop MFG is a low-cost bin monitoring solution that tracks temperature and humidity and alerts you when conditions exceed safe thresholds. Visit farmshopmfg.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. On Fridays, we have what we call Farmer Friday. That means we're taking your calls and questions all throughout the show. If you've got an agronomic question for us, if you want to update us on what's happening with harvest in your area or harvest weather in some cases, you can sure give us a call at 844-44-AG-PHD or send us an email, radio@agphd.com. Let's get back to the phone lines. Got Keith with us right now in Illinois. Keith, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right, Darren. How are you doing?
Good, good. So what are you up to right now?
Well, I'm just driving around looking at a few crops in the rain.
Yep.
Haven't had any rain for a good long time, but we've been pretty dry, just like I think a lot of people have been talking about having a dry September, and we were no different, and this is the first rain we've had in a good long time.
All right, so how's the crop hanging together? Does it still look good? Everything standing good, holding together?
Yeah, so far I don't know that I'd want to leave it out there real long as far as the corn goes, but we've still got quite a few beans that have got a lot of yellow leaves on them. The corn, though, we sprayed it there right around brown silk with fungicide, but most of it, and seemed to help. But then there about, I don't know if it was about the dough stage, you know, just about when it was about like it was maybe late enough not to spray again, the southern rust come in, and gray leaf spot was not horrible, but we had quite a bit. And then a little bit of northern corn leaf blight. You just find that everywhere.
Sure. So. Yep, even with the dry, it got in just before that. So what I hear you're doing something in the ditches after some brush. What you got going on there?
Well, it's really kind of everywhere, not just the ditches, but even around fields. The way the year was, the crop about got too big on me to get around all the fields that I typically spray, you know, the brush, and then even some places that have got some sapling trees on them that I'd like to just try to spray rather than taking them out mechanically. And I didn't know, you know, how late in the season a guy could take care of that, especially now that the crops are getting out. It's just going to be easier to get to them and that sort of thing. And didn't know if you guys had a kind of a cutoff thing as far as frost goes and how long you're going to be able to still do a good job.
All right, Brian, I got a couple questions for you too on this one, because I'm not 100% certain of the answer, because it is getting a little bit late in my mind. Do you need leaves on those things, or are you going to get enough intake through the bark and through the root system?
Well, it all depends on what you're doing. So if, let's say, you want to use Tordon, that was always the product we used on our farm, but Tordon has tremendous residual. I mean, years worth of residual. So you got to be careful about where you're using it, what you're using it next to. It'll kill fish and it'll kill trees. So if you've got anything desirable around, then that's a lot of times not a very good choice. But anyway, let's say that I am going to use Tordon. I don't care when you spray it. As long as the ground's not froze, you're going to get some help out of that Tordon, because even if you don't have foliage to absorb the Tordon anymore, you're going to have that Tordon working into the ground through the root system, and it will still kill trees off or little shrubs or whatever. I mean, it's really good. And, you know, another thing you could use would be chaparral. That's a combination of milestone and ally. I don't like it as well in terms of leaving as long a residual or having as much root activity, but it's still pretty good on a lot of the little brush species. Coming back to the Tordon, another thing, if the trees were a little bit bigger, you can just cut them off and then you paint over top of that, where you cut that tree off, with the Tordon, and then that literally gets down into that stump and kills everything off. And then the last product I guess I'd mention is one that has no residual. That's Remedy Ultra. We do really like that if we're worried about, let's say, rotational concerns or anything like that. But Remedy Ultra is a very good brush product. So those are usually the three that we talk about. Tordon, longest lasting. Chaparral, pretty good. And Remedy Ultra, basically no residual. In terms of how late you can spray, you know, if a lot of the leaves are off the little shrubs or whatever you're trying to kill, little brush, then Remedy's probably not a good choice anymore, and I'd wait till spring. But if you can get stuff done in the fall, I really like it in the fall, because then if you didn't quite kill the plant, winter sometimes finishes it off for you. So that's generally a big advantage. And like around here, we just got our first frost literally this morning at 30 degrees. Well, 30 degrees isn't going to take out a lot of saplings or brush or whatever. I'm not too worried about that. Next week, it's going to be back in the 60s again. So next week, I would probably go out and spray if it was me right in my area here.
Okay. Well, I think we're supposed to get that that cold front that you just got last night. We're supposed to get it tonight, I think. But I don't think they're calling for us to leave it about 38 or something like that.
Yeah.
And we still got, you know, there's still a lot of leaves on.
Yep.
What is there anything, can you mix tank mix Tordon and Remedy if you wanted a little bit more knockdown power?
Sure. You absolutely can do that. Yeah, I don't
just got to be careful where you're putting that Tordon on, that it's not going to be crop ground for a long time.
Sure. Yeah, and I don't know that you're going to get a lot of extra knockdown out of the Remedy versus the Tordon, but there might be a few species, you know, and that's one of the things I guess I tell all of our listeners, just look on the labels and it will tell you which species of brush and saplings and all that that these different products will control, because obviously it's got to be on the label. If it is, then you should have pretty good activity. But I will say, these things aren't like 2,4-D and annual broadleaf weeds, whereas literally you get out of the field, you just got done spraying, and the weeds are already curling. So it's going to take just a little bit of time, but that's okay. It will do the job.
Well, I wanted to make a comment about was I heard you make a comment, Brian, here a few weeks ago about everyone around here uses crossbow.
Okay.
And I've kind of wondered about, you'd made the comment, I wondered if it wasn't doing this, the 2,4-D wasn't just burning all the leaves off, and then the triclopyr doesn't have any time to work.
Right. Yeah, and
so
that
I've kind of switched Remedy.
Yeah, and that, yeah, the triclopyr, for all our listeners out there, triclopyr, that is Remedy Ultra that I'm talking about. And yeah, we learned this the hard way, I don't even know, 35 years ago probably on the farm, when you'd start putting 2,4-D together with Roundup. And you go, why aren't these perennial weeds dying off? So any perennial plant, any tough-to-kill plant, if you've got a better killer in there, a better herbicide in there, you don't want 2,4-D to shut that plant down in advance of that other product doing the job. So yeah, I agree with you 100%. I don't love 2,4-D in with a lot of things when we're trying to get permanent control on a perennial type plant. All right.
Very good. Thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for the call.
All right, let's head over to Iowa. We've got Kevin with us in north central Iowa. Kevin, how are things going on your farm?
Well, we got some rain yesterday and last night, but wind's blowing today, and if we can keep away from the rain tonight, I'll try beans again tomorrow.
There you go. How about fall tillage? What's on your mind there?
Well, we've got some guys that are telling us you have to go with the rows, and some other guys are telling us you should tilt, deep till at an angle. And I just wondered if you guys had done any trials on that and see which one's better.
Well, it all depends on what's your goal. If your goal is to mix things around, then going at an angle is great. If your goal is, I want to get the very best possible stand next spring with my planter, then we really like to see stuff with the row. Now, if your goal is both of those things that I just mentioned, I don't know that I have a real great answer for you, but I that planter thing, Darren and I have been talking about this a lot in the last few years, and Darren's been much higher on it than me, and every year I go, okay, well, I give up. You know, we got to do more with the planter. And then the next year it's like, okay, we got to do even more yet with the planter. And here's where I'm going with this. If you go out literally, let's say you have a 24-row planter like we do. What we did is we went out and how many ears did they pull, Darren? 20 ears from each row?
We pulled 1/1000th of an acre from each row.
Okay, yeah.
So 17 feet, 5 inches on 30-inch rows.
So what we did is for each one of the rows, and this took a lot of time, but I made Darren do it. So anyway, it was all good. But it took a lot of time. But anyway, we went out and got all these ears and lined them all up. And you could see from row to row, there was an 80-bushel difference. And when you see that, you go, man, we have got to make some changes in what we're doing. We've got to adjust the planter better, and we got to do a better job getting a great seed bed across the board. Hey, Kevin, we got to take a quick break here. If you got some more questions for us, we'll talk to you right after the break. Stay tuned. This is Ag PhD Radio.
Every farmer knows there are lots of steps to having a perfect season. Don't let your fertilizer plan be the step that trips you up. For over 35 years, AgroLiquid has had the experts and the products that'll help you move closer to your target. No matter when you apply fertilizer, no matter how, you'll hit the bullseye. AgroLiquid can help you increase yields and crop quality. To learn more, go to agroliquid.com. AgroLiquid moves you closer to your target.
When it comes to my weed control, I know a head start can go a long way. That's why I spray early, so I can keep control all season long with the Roundup Ready Extend crop system, the system that makes the difference. This is my field.
Choose the Roundup Ready Extend crop system for control of more weeds than any other soybean system. Featuring Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology to manage tough-to-control weeds, including up to 14 days of soil activity, along with the field-proven performance of Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Now you have the right tools to extend your weed control and extend your yield with the system that makes the difference. Learn how you can put the system to work in your field when you visit RoundupReadyExtend.com. Extendamax is a restricted-use pesticide. Performance may vary. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
Every farmer knows that in order to be profitable, you need to maximize the return on your crop input investments. Hi, I'm Scott Harms, an agri-risk specialist with Grain PhD. Without an effective and flexible strategy, your grain marketing plan gets stuck in the mud. With Grain PhD, you get the clarity and guidance a solid marketing plan needs. Our free Grain Bridge software simplifies your cost-profit analysis, and our risk specialists are here to help you develop your plan. Sign up today at grainphd.com.
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. Our exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
Welcome Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio on Farmer Friday, taking your calls and questions all throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. Just before the break, we were talking with Kevin over in North Central Iowa, who's waiting for the rain to quit coming and hopefully get back into some soybeans real shortly here. So, Kevin, what have you seen with harvest so far? Has it been a good crop?
It's just a little bit below average. You know, we had some beans that are coming out around the 60 to 65, and I've had some that are coming out around the 55. So it's difference. I was really surprised, though. We had some no-till beans that were actually up there in the 65 bushel area. So
yeah, that's really good for this year. Did you see, was it planting date? Was it disease? Was it something else that caused the yield differences you're seeing?
It really couldn't be planting date because they were only planted a day apart, and we got them in on May 16th and 15th and 16th and things that way. I think it was a hybrid. It's the new GTLLs, and I've been happy with them, and they look great all summer long. I'm just a little disappointed in the fall, but I could see on the lower yields that there was some pod pop out there with a they were dry. We could have combined them probably a week and a half ago, and then we got all the rain back in there and didn't get to them in time, and there's beans laying on the ground. So
yeah, that's disappointing. Yeah, I know it. You just can't beat Mother Nature sometimes. And I'm just thinking too, with all this wind that's coming through the last few days here, that I'm sure there'll be guys saying that the next couple of weeks too. Oh, if I could have just got out there before this wind, it would have sure helped things. So fall tillage, you were talking about that earlier. Do you normally do some tillage? You said you had some no-till. Is there some of your ground you till for one reason or another?
Well, we're going to have some corn on corn, and okay, we'll go out and disc rip that. And, you know, our practice has always been at an angle, you know, and we have the neighbors doing it straight up and down and telling us, well, that's the way you need to go. I know earlier planning, I mean, I'm talking 15 years ago, anytime we went straight up and down, those ridges would grab the tractor and move it back and forth.
Yep.
Now with the auto steer and stuff, that's kind of taking care of that problem, and better field cultivators and stuff are doing a better job that way too. You know, and so it's just, I was wondering if there's a great advantage between one and the other. As far as a planter goes, we've got the new planter, electric drives, hydraulic downforce, and that hydraulic downforce is a godsend, because with that no-till last year, we had done some fall tillage and then just got too late. And you could actually watch the pressure change on that, and you could not see a line or anything when it come to spring emergence and harvest this fall.
Yeah, that's really good. We're kind of in the same boat as you, and we traditionally have done tillage at an angle, but it's one of the things where I'm also getting told, especially by a lot of high yield guys, hey, do it with the row. And so it's one of the things for our guys, they're pretty resistant to it, because we've got a couple guys that have worked for us on the farm for years and years, and it's like, well, we've always done it this way. I go, I know, but let's try some the other way and see what happens, because I'm with you. Now that you have auto steer and everything else, I think we're going to be a little bit better, even with all this, you know, automatic adjustment. We got all the precision planting stuff on the planter and everything else. We have to get better. Like I was saying before the break, when we see that 80 bushel difference from row to row with our planter, we've got to make better adjustments with the planter. We got to do more in terms of getting a great seed bed. We just want that seed to come out of the ground at the same time or as close as we possibly can. So yeah, I there is no perfect answer. If there was, everybody would be doing it.
Okay. I do have one more question.
Sure.
We had some prevent plant, and I have some seed left over from last year on soybeans. Of course, it was treated, so I couldn't send it back.
Yep.
If I keep that in an environment that's about 45 degrees through the winter,
yep,
will I see a drastic germ change?
You may or may not. So we've done a lot of that kind of testing over the last 30 years. And many times, let's say that we started out at 90% germ and 80% stress test or 80% cold test. The next year, a lot of times it'll drop to 80% germ and it'll drop to 20% on the cold test. So we've also had it where the germ stays pretty good. So I would just tell you, test it next spring or, you know, late this winter. And then if it's at least close on the germ, just go ahead and plant it if you want to. Maybe plant it a little bit thicker, but don't plant it into cold conditions or when cold weather is going to be showing up, because that cold germ usually falls really hard in 1 year.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, all right. Appreciate that.
You bet.
Thanks a lot, Kim.
All right. We got an email in from John over in Minnesota, and he said, I hear that University of Minnesota is saying there is a second species now of gall midge. Yep, that's what they're saying. And I don't like the first species, Darren. The second species, you know, whatever. I mean, it's both gall midge. It attacks the plant the same way, it appears. So whatever. This gall midge, if you're not familiar with it, it is one of the worst pests for soybeans that we have ever found. And the trouble is, we don't have a real fantastic recommendation for you in terms of how to control it. It's a little fly that goes around and lays eggs inside your soybean stem. Those eggs hatch, and then the little worms, the little larvae, will hollow out the inside of your stem, possibly with your plant breaking over, kind of like what ends up happening with wheat stem sawfly. But even if the plant doesn't break over, you still have a fair amount of yield loss. So we've had guys get their yields completely wiped out from this soybean gall midge. Where we usually see it is on field borders, especially where your soybean field this year borders where a soybean field was last year. And we have found gall midge on our farm. We have found lots of gall midge in northeast Nebraska, northwest Iowa, southeast South Dakota, and now moving into Minnesota and just spreading out from there. So we are really worried about this particular pest. I'm not too concerned that, oh, there's another species of gall midge. It's still gall midge, and I don't know if there's anything really different about it. But yeah, just be scouting for that and check your bean fields. If you're seeing some terrible yield along the borders of some of your bean fields, I would stop the combine and I would look for some of those holes or split the plants open. See if you can find these little orange worms inside the plant. When you do, or if you do, report it to somebody, your university extension agent, your agronomist. I mean, just let somebody know so people start identifying it more in your area.
All right, got an email in from Kevin in Western Illinois, who was on the show earlier. He said, I heard the other Kevin from Illinois asking about crossbow. Hey, first of all, Kevin, nice move. Label him as the other Kevin. I like that. So next time we bring him back up, Janelle, we have to say, we got the other Kevin. Anyway, Kevin says, I've used crossbow alone and with crop oil on my drainage ditches, and it seems like either it just burns the leaves off and it doesn't kill the brush. So he's kind of the same mindset, that he thinks the 240 is maybe a little bit too hot in there and you might be better off just with using a straight
remedy ultra.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Thanks. Really appreciate the feedback, Kevin. That's good. Okay. Got one here. This is from John. He said, when does a corn plant decide which leaf the ear is set on?
Well, first of all, that you can have a whole bunch of ears on that plant. And a lot of times, if there's a stress, then it can change. So like this year, there were some guys that had green snap, and I think the plant had already determined it wanted to be on a certain node, and then it ended up being on a different node. So remember that plants have one mission in life, one goal in life, and that's to reproduce. So if there is a stress, then things can change. Also, if conditions are abnormally good, they can put more seed on. Either that ear can get bigger, or the kernels can get deeper and fuller, or you might get a second, or in some cases even a third ear that is on that plant. So yeah, when does that happen exactly? I don't know. I can tell you this, a lot of things happen in the plant super early, like even ear shoot initiation starts at V3. You think about how early that is in the plant, super early.
Yeah, and we notice as emergence varies a little bit, we're going to see ears higher up on the plant with the early emergers versus the late emergers. That's something to watch for in your fields right now. As you walk down the row, you should see your ears at the same note all the way across. Otherwise, chances are you're giving up some yield to late emergers. Thanks for the question, John. Really appreciate that. Thanks to everybody who called in or wrote in with questions today. And thanks to you for listening. And be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. Now, stay tuned for Rob Sharkey and Shark Farmer Radio.